you had the four companies, the three North Slope producers in particular, agreeing on something. That's always new.
An agreement on where the gas pipeline should end. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 7th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a sunken tender closes the Haines Harbor.
Everybody's moving as fast as we can, but we want to make sure that we're not contaminating Lincoln Canal by opening up the harbor.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Since natural gas was discovered on the North Slope, there's been talk of building a pipeline to get it to market. But where should that pipeline end? Today, Exxon, BP, ConocoPhillips, and TransCanada announced that Nikiski is their top choice for a stopping point. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
Steve Butt, the project's senior manager, says the decision came down to some pretty simple questions.
Is it suitable for a site? Can you build it there and can you run it there? We thought that the Nikiski industrial area had the best possibility of success.
By choosing a spot on the Kenai Peninsula, the companies could build a pipeline that passes through the interior and south central and delivers natural gas to consumers along the way. There's access to a large population base that already has some experience with natural gas processing. And, especially important, there's plenty of space to develop industrial facilities. About 500 acres of land are needed at the pipeline stopping point to build a processing plant and other infrastructure. Butt says that's the big reason Nikiski was chosen over Valdez. That even though Valdez already has a marine terminal, there might not be as much space to build a major LNG plant. So, Alaskans have been waiting for the development of a natural gas pipeline for years. Exactly how big of a deal is this announcement? Larry Persily is the federal coordinator for an Alaska natural gas pipeline, and he says it is an important development.
It's not the order for steel that Alaskans want. It's not the order for the ribbon, for the groundbreaking that Alaskans want, but it's significant. You had the four companies, the three North Slope producers in particular, agreeing on something. That's always new.
The governor, members of the congressional delegation, legislators from both parties have all issued celebratory press releases welcoming the decision. State lawmakers who have promoted the development of a separate, smaller gas line say this could even lead to a merger of the two projects. Persily says that makes sense, because the choice of Nikiski as an endpoint would seem to
eliminate the need for a small-volume state-supported line going same route, same direction, same customers.
So instead of something meant to primarily serve Alaska utilities, you would just have one single big line that would transfer billions of cubic feet of gas every day, mostly for export. It would stretch 800 miles, have five takeoff points, and cost at least $45 billion. And that price tag is still the big hurdle. Project manager Steve Butt says that just because they have an idea of where they want to end the gas line, the North Slope producers still need to be confident the line will be profitable before they start building anything.
Until you really understand that fiscal structure, it's like asking somebody to take out a 30-year mortgage on a home, but they don't know what the interest rate is. You know, we need to know those fundamental numbers so that as we move forward, everybody can have confidence that it makes sense.
That means expect a debate on how much we should tax natural gas. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The CEO of Great Bear Petroleum says their new 3D seismic data confirms a promising new oil resource in the shale rock just south of Prudhoe Bay. CEO Ed Duncan says they received the data late last month and are still examining it.
Every source rock that we predicted to be present is present at the depths that we predicted it to be in the state of thermal maturity that we predicted. I mean, these are things we've said to the state, we've publicly stated in presentations. The rocks are there.
Great Bear is the first company to actively pursue unconventional oil in the state. Duncan won't provide any specifics, but he is confident that with modern fracking technology, they can get oil out of the rocks and make money.
There's nothing nothing not doable about our technical and our business thesis.
The small independent company leased about 500,000 acres of land from the state in 2010 with the hopes of finding commercially viable oil in the shale. A 2012 USGS report says that there could be up to 950 million barrels in the rocks Great Bear is targeting. At this point, Duncan says the company has spent over $100 million. They have only drilled two exploratory wells so far, directly next to the Dalton Highway, though they have six permitted. Joe Balash is acting commissioner of the state's Department of Natural Resources. He says the resource isn't proven until more wells are drilled, but he sees great potential.
We think, our geologists think, that there is tremendous opportunity with the unconventional resource, and we hope Great Bear is just the first company to make a buck on it.
Duncan says they will gather more seismic data this winter. Then they will unveil their development plan at the end of 2014. That includes how they'll get the oil off of the North Slope.
So initial development would very likely be trucked to Prudhoe. And then longer-term development certainly would warrant a dedicated processing facility and very likely a tap into the pipeline.
Great Bear's leases are about 15 miles south of Pump Station 1. The group behind the proposed Pebble Mine is laying off workers after one of the partners in the controversial project pulled out. Pebble Limited Partnership spokesman Mike Heatwall declined to say how many workers and contractors will be affected. He says Pebble had 70 to 80 full-time workers before the layoffs began last week. Last month, Anglo American PLC announced that a subsidiary was withdrawing from the project, leaving Canada-based Northern Dynasty Minerals Limited as the sole owner. Heatwall said this remains an important project for Alaska and that Northern Dynasty is looking for additional partners to keep the project moving forward. Pebble had hoped to move into the permitting phase this year. Heatwall couldn't say whether that would change. In the Anchorage area, the first big wind storm of the season is forecast to hit early tomorrow morning. With lots of wet weather and the ground still not frozen, the National Weather Service says Anchorage should be prepared for some downed trees and power outages. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
Say one last goodbye to the golden leaves that have brightened Anchorage's autumn. They're about to be blown away. That's according to Sean Baines, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Anchorage. He says it's going to be very windy Tuesday.
For those areas that typically get these really high winds turning an arm in higher elevations, we're looking for gusts of 75 to 90 miles per hour. But we are expecting some of that wind, not nearly that strong, to get down to lower elevations of Anchorage, the lower hillside, and parts of East Anchorage near the mountains. And we're looking for gusts to 50 to 65 miles per hour there.
Sustained winds of 45 to 65 miles per hour are expected in the Turnagain Arm and upper hillside. The lower hillside, East Anchorage and Eagle River, can expect sustained winds of 20 to 35 miles per hour. Winds will increase overnight and be at their height between 6 and 10 a.m. With a wet August and September, meteorologist Eddie Zingoni, also with the Anchorage Office of the National Weather Service, says the wind has the potential to do some real damage.
There's a greater chance in this storm to see uprooted trees, which of course increases the chance that one could knock out the power or be across the road in the morning. During the morning commute, maybe could cause an issue with that.
Zingoni says winds are predicted to pick up just after midnight, and the high wind warning will remain in effect until noon. Forecasters say this storm won't likely last as long as the one that hit last September. That storm lasted for over 12 hours and knocked out power for about a week in some parts of the city. A quarter to one-half inch of rain is expected during this storm, and minor flooding onto roadways is possible. The National Weather Service has issued a high wind warning from 1 a.m. until noon Tuesday. The Red Cross is urging Anchorage residents to be prepared. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, getting by on no income during the federal government shutdown.
It's very stressful. You know, the power company doesn't accept IOUs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Thousands of Alaskans have already gone through a home or commercial energy audit. These programs can identify ways to save a third on energy costs. For more energy and cost-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Salvage began today on a tender that sank over the weekend in the Haines Harbor. Crews continued working to contain leaking fuel from the boat while also trying to accommodate the area's fishing fleet. From member station KHNS, Margaret Friedenauer reports.
The 76-foot fishing tender Neptune sank while moored at the harbor about 1 a.m. Saturday. No one was on board, but someone in the harbor called 911, and Harbor Master Phil Benner was notified. Benner said he and his staff responded and found the engine room flooded and the back deck already underwater.
We did try to get some gas pumps started and on the boat, but it did not. It wasn't successful. The boat started tilting off the dock, and we evacuated everybody off the boat, cut the lines.
Benner said the harbor staff deployed containment booms at the harbor's entrance within 45 minutes. He contacted the boat's owner, who said there is about 1,600 gallons of fuel on board. Early Saturday morning, Benner shut the harbor to boat traffic to keep leaking fuel from spreading into Port Chilkoot.
Everybody's moving as fast as we can, but we want to make sure that we're not contaminating Lynn Canal by opening up the harbor.
A fuel sheen is visible throughout the harbor, and the smell of diesel continues to linger in the area. But state and Coast Guard officials say very little fuel has escaped the harbor, and no wildlife appears to have been affected. Local diver Norm Hughes went to the harbor early Saturday to see the sunken tender. Then the boat's owner, Don Axelson, called Hughes to see if he would dive on the boat. As a commercial fisherman, Hughes was especially interested in helping out.
Don called me a little while later and asked if I'd go down and see if I can get the fuel vents closed off so we can keep the oil from coming out, and maybe they'll open the harbor back up then. If we can stop the environmental leaking of the oil, then maybe the fleet can leave and go fishing.
The gillnet fleet would normally leave the harbor early Sunday for the fishing grounds, and this time of year, most of the fishermen were selling to the tender Neptune. The Neptune is privately owned but contracted by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. The company diverted a tender en route to Washington to the Lynn Canal. Local officials and responders devised a plan to allow the fishing boats out of the harbor by setting up a decontamination station. Beginning Sunday morning, fishing boats were stopped at the entrance and sprayed down. Coast Guard Petty Officer Joshua Thorne explained the process.
As you can see, we're using pressure washers to really try to get as much of the film or sheen of the oil off the vessels prior to letting them outside of the harbor.
After the fleet left, the cleanup effort began in earnest. More than a dozen responders were walking the docks in the harbor and using small skiffs to lay out absorbent oil pads. The boat owner hired Juno Marine salvager John Gitgoff, who was on scene by Sunday evening. Coast Guard Petty Officer Jeff Cruz said Sunday, the salvage operation is going to be difficult. The Neptune is a wooden hull boat built in 1937.
If you raise it the wrong way, it could break up, it could do all sorts of other stuff. So, and we don't want to necessarily mess with it while it's underwater. You could, but it's also, you run risks of contaminating the wood, getting oil contamination all throughout the boat and making it harder to dispose of.
While the Coast Guard continues to investigate the cause of the sinking, Mattson said calm, mild weather is contributing to the cleanup effort. But he said he won't know how much fuel has leaked until the Neptune is raised. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
Federal workers who have been furloughed will likely be paid retroactively once the shutdown is over. And government employees who are remaining on the job during the shutdown will be paid for their work eventually, but they don't know when. For Alaska families living paycheck to paycheck, that's a severe hardship. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has the story of one family in Wrangell.
Daniel and Beth Blake moved to Wrangell from Tennessee. Daniel is a military veteran, and both he and Beth are former police officers. Daniel works full-time now as a TSA agent at the Wrangell Airport. He's also the primary breadwinner for his family. Early last week, Daniel, as a federal employee, got an email. Beth says it got straight to the point.
Work as usual, but don't expect a paycheck. So there is no pay until the government shutdown is over.
Federal employees like TSA agents and air marshals are considered necessary for public safety, so they aren't being furloughed. They're just working without pay, like Daniel. It's expected that once the shutdown ends, they will be retroactively paid for hours worked, but Beth says no one knows when that will be. She works too, but spends most of her time caring for her daughter Kelsey, who has severe disabilities and many healthcare needs. I'm sitting with Beth in the kitchen of the apartment that she and Daniel rent. Kelsey's in the living room watching TV. Daniel isn't able to talk to me because of the nature of his job, but Beth can. She says their first reaction was shock, which turned to anger and then frustration.
It's very stressful, and it's just the fear of the unknown. How long is this going to go on? You know, the power company doesn't accept IOUs.
For the Blakes, money is now a serious issue. She says they've already had to write to their landlords saying they can't pay the rent on their apartment until the shutdown is over. But she says one of the most surprising moments was when Daniel got a letter.
Basically saying, here's a copy of a letter that you can send to your creditors so that maybe they will have pity on you and give you a break if you don't make your payments. Yeah, when you have a child support payment to make, the ex-spouse doesn't care about that. You know, no one cares about IOUs. They want their money.
They're not sure where the money will come from to pay child support for Daniel's 17-year-old son in Tennessee. They're also in the process of buying a house with a loan from the Department of Veterans Affairs, or VA. Beth says buying a house is a complicated process with many steps. She says they're still worried that being late on their van, truck, and credit card payments will hurt their credit and prevent them from getting that loan. But perhaps even more than that, she says it's the stress of not knowing when that next paycheck is coming that's impacting their daily lives.
And you don't really realize how important that is until suddenly it dawns on you, hey, I want to have tacos for dinner tonight. I don't have the stuff. Let's run down to the grocery store and pick up those supplies. But then you go, nope. Well, we'll just eat what we have in the freezer. You know, fortunately, we do have some fish and some meat put away, so we'll be living on that for a while.
She says her family feels like they've been taken hostage to politics. And ultimately, she says it's not about party lines. It's about the everyday Joes that get stuck in the middle.
So I'm not blaming the Democrats. I'm not blaming the Republicans. I'm just saying that all parties need to come together and work this out for the little people, for those of us that, you know, that are out here trying to make ends meet. And it's a struggle.
Information specialists at the Fed Info Government Shutdown Hotline declined to answer questions from the media, and the media email contact provided for the TSA did not respond by deadline Friday. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Calling all Alaskan artists. Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
Anchorage police say an 18-year-old man who was beaten and left to die in an abandoned downtown house in Anchorage has not regained consciousness. Spokeswoman Jennifer Castro says detectives continue to follow up on leads in the assault on James Clinton. Clinton was found late September 16th in a home due to be demolished at 8th Avenue and Barrow Street. Police say he likely would have died if an anonymous note had not been slipped under the door of the University of Alaska Anchorage Police Squad Room. The note said Clinton had been left in the house. UAA police alerted Anchorage police, who found Clinton inside the boarded-up home. He had suffered severe injuries to his face and body. The home was demolished September 19th to make room for a parking lot. Fairbanks police are expected to play a support role in the review of new data raised in the Fairbanks 4 case. The new information filed in court last month points to other suspects than the four local men convicted of the 1997 murder of John Hartman. Last week, the state announced that it would conduct a review of the information raised by the Alaska Innocence Project, including a confession by a former Fairbanks resident imprisoned for other murders. Fairbanks Police Chief Laren Zager says his department embraces the opportunity to assist on what he calls an important and independent balanced review.
And we support it to the degree that we will furnish manpower, reports, anything that we can do to facilitate that investigation and to ensure that that investigation is the highest quality possible, we will be doing it.
Zager stresses the state is in charge of the review. The state is not commenting, but Zager says the focus includes uncovering additional information and possibly reopening the investigation.
The Innocence Project is very limited in resources, and I think we can contribute to that effort. We being, the collective side, not the Fairbanks Police Department directly.
There's resentment in the Fairbanks, Alaska Native community that justice was not served in the case against the Fairbanks Four, three of whom are Alaska Native. Zager hopes the broad-based review will help the situation.
To help ensure that there's no tainting in the investigation at all, no residual hard feelings that this department really doesn't have, but we want to make absolutely dead certain that it doesn't influence us at all.
It's unclear how long the review will take. The state is seeking time beyond the allotted 45 days to respond to the new data included in requests for post-conviction relief. A dispute between the municipality of Anchorage and Eklutna Incorporated is headed to court. Eklutna Inc. is an Alaska Native village corporation. It claims it is due about half the revenue generated from the methane gas produced at the Anchorage landfill. But Muni attorneys say the land didn't generate the gas, city garbage did. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Eklutna Incorporated attorneys filed suit against the municipality of Anchorage in state superior court last week in a case that could hinge on the term net income. In a printed statement, Eklutna attorney Walter Featherly states that an agreement executed in 1982 by the city, the Alaska Native Corporation, and the state mandates that revenues from the use of public lands be shared with Alaska Native entities. Under the North Anchorage Land Agreement, 274 acres of federal land were conveyed to the city, which were designated as public lands. Later, the city used the land for the Anchorage Regional Landfill in Eagle River and now sells the methane gas created by the garbage there to generate electricity for Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Featherly says under the terms of the agreement, the city must share the revenue from the gas. At stake is more than $40 million in projected gas revenues, but the city will fight in court to keep the money, according to municipality attorney Dennis Wheeler.
They're not entitled to a portion of the income.
According to attorney Wheeler, the land use agreement applies only to revenues related to the land itself, not from improvements on the land.
Our position is that the agreement we have with Eklutna is actually very clear. The agreement says that if there's net income, that net income share with Eklutna is only for those things that are attributable to the land as opposed to the improvements on the land. The landfill gas is not attributable to the land. It's not like trees or minerals or natural gas that comes out of the ground. It is purely a byproduct of the creation and development and operation of the landfill.
Eklutna attorney Featherly won't discuss the matter further. The project was expected to generate as much as $48 million for the city, the complaint said, but it's unclear how much of that would be profits that Eklutna could claim. Wheeler says the city has an obligation to its taxpayers and cannot give away income necessary for the continued operation of the landfill. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim region is gaining national attention through the business savvy of the local Spark sisters, who happen to be triplets. Since 2006, the entrepreneurs have run a cosmetic company, Arxotica, using ingredients from the tundra. Now they have a chance to win a free commercial for their company, which will be aired during the Super Bowl, and they're asking for your help. KYUK's Sophie Ivan has the story.
The Intuit Business Organization has selected Arxotica as a second-round finalist, where small businesses are competing nationally for a free commercial to be aired during the next Super Bowl, Jika Spark.
This is a chance for a small business, you know, who would never have the budget to get a big-time commercial in the biggest game, you know, of the year. So they're sponsoring a contest where a small business can win a commercial in the Super Bowl. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to be that company.
In order for Arxotica to win, supporters must log on to the Intuit website and vote for the business of their choice, in this case, Arxotica. The business with the most online votes will win a commercial, which will then be aired during the next Super Bowl.
We were just so surprised and shocked and excited that we're still in, you know, we still have this chance.
The triplets started their high-end skincare business, Arxotica, which is an amalgam of Arctic and exotic, which the triplets say describes Yupik country. They are the daughters of the late Harold Spark and their mother, Lucy Spark of Chivac.
We would look at the tundra as we were picking, and we always knew, you know, we use this for this, all this food and everything we gather. We use it as our food and we use it as our medicine. What else could you do with it? You know, that's always something that we had on our mind. What else could it be good for? It's got to be so good for, you know, the skin.
The sisters handpick their herb, berry, and flower blossoms from the tundra. The ingredients then go to one of the country's leading product manufacturing plants in order to meet rigorous formulating safety and quality control standards. The Spark sisters say their goal is to grow a subsistence-compatible business that will change the face of the economy in Western Alaska and possibly other Arctic countries. Arxotica was recently awarded by the Jalista Corporation as a Business of the Year during the 2013 annual meeting. In Bethel, I'm Sophie Ivan.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Sophie Ivan in Bethel. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.